A golf course you've seen on TV since you were a little kid, Pebble Beach, one of our cathedrals of golf. And you're here now, standing on the number one tee box, anxious but excited to experience what the golf gods have in store for the round. But you top it and take a walk of shame as you walk 20 yards and re-hit with your 3-wood. You take a 7. Hole number 6, your favorite hole in all of golf. The one you think about when you're stuck in another meeting at work that could have been a short email. But unlike your imaginations, your drive goes wide left, landing in the foot-long thicket. A rare miss for you. You try to scramble, but card another 7. Holes 7 and 8 aren't any better. You try to regroup at the turn, hole number 10. You are warned that everything leads towards the ocean at Pebble. This hole proves that's an understatement. As you land on the left side of the fairway and still somehow manage to find the right rough, you guessed it, another 7. Hole 14, a chance to claw back a few strokes on this lovely par 5. Greenside bunker says no. Looks like a snowman for you. Frustration and embarrassment start to sink in. You're better than this. But the scorecard disagrees, so you try to reach back. Remember, golf is 18 holes, and you're not done yet. And though no records will be broken today, that's not what golf is about. You get that reminder in full on hole 18. The salty mist of the Pacific Ocean wafts in the air from the west, but that doesn't stop a perfect drive, and you land just past the iconic cypress splitting the fairway. A 3-wood from there lands you 120 yards out. A pitching wedge, which you managed to stick to 1 foot of the pin. Unbeknownst to you, viewers were watching from their hotel balcony. They give a small round of applause. You step up to your ball, and feeling fearless, bring the putter back and sink the putt. A birdie. Any memories of a struggle in the round vanish. Pure elation. These are the moments we'll remember, not the sevens or the eights, not the lost balls and the duff chips, but the times when it all comes together. This is why we're here, and this is why we golf. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers. Our continuing mission, explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses. And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
All right, everybody, welcome back to For the Record. I'm John Paul. I'm joined here with my friends Cody.
Hey.
And Eric.
Hello.
And as a recap from last time, we had talked about our handicaps last time and talked about our quest to try and become better golfers. That quest will commence shortly here as we are getting close to the beginning of the golfing season. Today's episode is going to focus on specific goals that we have for the upcoming season as we anticipate the beginning of golf.
So do you have any specific goals for this season? I do.
Well, let's start with you. Okay. We'll go around.
Well, Cody started last time. Let's start with you, John Paul.
Okay. Goals for this year. Do we do it round robin? Do we share one goal and then move to the next person around?
Yeah, let's do that.
I've got 5.
Okay. Whoa. We'll just stop on you more frequently because I don't have that many.
I have like 3 or maybe 4.
Okay. Goal number 1, I deeply desire a sub 18 handicap this year. I think I can get a sub 18 handicap. And for the listeners who don't understand how the handicap system works, it isn't that I have to golf under bogey each time to do that. It just means that of my last 20 rounds, I have to have 10 of them where the differential is below that number. And so basically I have to golf one stroke better than bogey golf 10 times.
I think you made up some of those words.
All right, so that's yours. Go for it, Cody.
That's number 1.
Okay, I like that. On the same vein, so I'll tell you, the inspiration for my goal list kind of came a couple weeks ago. I was actually watching, I can't remember which event it was in the PGA, but they showed an Instagram post of Jordan Spieth, and he had his goals from 2024, and it was like a written down checklist. He only did like 2 of them out of his 12. Poor guy.
Makes us feel better.
But I was just kind of like, okay, I like this. If I'm going to set some goals, I'm going to be lofty. So on the same vein, one of my goals for this season, which where we live, we can only post scores until October. It's like March 15th to like the end of October.
Yeah.
And then we can't post. So that's our season. All of that to say, I want to get my handicap under 21.
That seems completely reasonable.
I agree. I think that it's there. I just need to do it.
Yeah.
My handicap goal is to get to 28.
That's a good goal.
Okay.
I think I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I bet you'll exceed that, to be honest. But I think it's good to.
Yeah, I would imagine flattering. So as well.
Yeah.
Only based on the fact that, again, you've only been doing this for 2 years and you're
31. I have not. It's five.
And yeah.
It has not been 5 years.
There's no way it's
been five. We started golfing about the time that my youngest was born.
I think, though, when we talk about golfing, there are different levels of golfing. I think when you spend more than $100 on any one club that is in your bag, at that point you become a golfer, right? If you go and you just like pick up a set from a thrift store for, you know.
Or steal a set from your friend.
Or have a friend who's golfed forever and never throws a club away, hand you a whole bag and say, here, come golfing with us.
Yeah,
I don't think that counts. I think the moment that you're like, you know what? I care enough about this game that I am going to go to my wife and ask for a significant sum of money to buy a stick with which I can whack a rock. I think that's the moment of golf. And so if we talk about that with you, that's about 2 years.
The first club I bought was a year, like less than 2 years
ago. Your irons, I think, when you got your irons.
No, my
was it
driver.
Your driver first?
My driver,
yeah. Your driver's before your irons? Okay.
That's the first real club that you spent money on.
Yeah, to give some background, I borrowed John Paul's clubs for a few years. They were a Walmart special, which were – they worked great. But I needed – some of my own. I love my driver and my putter.
Oh, yeah.
My wedges are all right.
Yeah.
It's the never-ending chase, always changing the bag. Another one of my goals for this season. I want to break 90 three times.
Three times. Breaking 90.
Yep.
Oh,
90 would be a bogey golf round. Yeah. I want to do better than bogey golf three times.
Yeah.
So that's all 18. Just for those listeners that might not know, that's for all 18 getting 90.
Yeah,
yeah, that's not that's not 90 on 9 holes. Just
no, par 72, right? So 90 would be 18 over that, which is bogey golf.
Yeah,
which is, you know, not particularly great, but for me, if I could break 90 three times this season, I'd be happy.
That's excellent. That's a great goal. Almost all of our rounds, unless we're on a trip or a weekend, are 9-hole rounds, which we combine.
Yeah.
And so often when we're reading scorecards or talking about particular rounds, we are talking about 9-hole rounds, even though we'll refer to the gross score of two combined 9-hole rounds for an 18.
And they actually don't combine 9-hole rounds anymore in your handicap.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
They use some fancy stuff on the back end to basically say, you played 9, this is probably what you would have done on 18.
Which, yeah, that could be...
Yeah.
Depending on your round, that could be real good or real bad.
Well, and knowing like the difference that I've had between front nines and back nines when I have played 18-hole rounds, I am glad I was not on the committee that made that decision, because I can usually hold together pretty well for the first 9 holes. And if it's just going to anticipate my future performance based on those 9 holes, that is only an advantage.
And I feel like it's the opposite for Cody. Like, Cody, he really warms up. And when he's in towards the end of 18 holes, he is really striping it well.
Well, we'll see. I want to see if I can get three under 90 scores on there. I would love that.
That's such a good one.
All right. What else you got?
You ready for this one?
I am.
Okay. The next one is going
to sound. I wasn't ready for it.
It's going to sound a little technical, and so I'm sorry.
Oh, no, they were ready for
very
that.
Non-technical listeners. But one thing that I'm very self-conscious about is that I don't have a terrific swing speed. And when we talk about club head speed, your average pro is swinging. I think Rory's cruising speed's about 120, 125.
And we're talking driver.
Driver club head speed, and. My club head speed is that of an 80-year-old man, and I'm only 45. I shouldn't be that old. And without going into a lot of detail right now, there are some medical issues for that and whatnot, but they're poor, sorry excuses. And so I would like a cruising driver speed, not full-out swing out of my shoes. I want a cruising driver speed over 90 miles per hour.
Okay.
That's not far off from where I am right now. But the club at 85 miles per hour versus a club at 92 miles per hour, say, that only doesn't sound like a big difference, but those clubs are not designed to swing 85 miles an hour. If you're not getting to that 92 number, it doesn't get in the air. Like the land distance, the loft angles, landing on the green, nothing works the way it's designed to, because the club designers are generally looking at 90 mile an hour plus swing speeds when they design those clubs. And so it puts me at a significant disadvantage with a lot of my clubs because I just swing the club too darn slow.
You know what you might need? You might need to get one of the shafts from the Golden.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
I think that's what you
put
need
that on
to
your
do.
Driver. The
super whippy old lady shaft.
Yes. Get one of those.
That's what you need.
I have solid evidence that that's not actually a bad plan. But I'd like to reserve it as a plan B.
All right.
Maybe plan C or D. You know, we got a couple other things you can try. I think increasing your swing speed is not a bad goal for you.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Got another one?
Yeah. My second goal is to get on the green with chipping, like within two chips.
Yeah.
Because my biggest problem at this point, I mean, I've got some things that I need to fix, but I play tennis with the green, and I need to stop that. That's when I blow up, and I need to fix that.
It's a good goal.
It is the most aggravating thing in golf, playing tennis over the green.
Oh, yeah. And there's one hole in particular. Let's see. I think it's the sixth hole on at Ochre.
Okay, let me think. Six hole. Front nine or back nine?
Front nine.
Sorry, we think about them all as different nines.
So it's the one where you hit and there's like a jut out of trees. It's a dog leg, right? And then there's the green that then
yes,
goes up to the
I have
bank.
You. Yep. The hole that should be really easy and yet isn't.
And I can get to that green pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Consistently. But once I'm there, I don't know why that's my blow-up hole
well, and
every
that's,
time.
If you go over the green on that hole, then you're chipping like 6 feet vertical to get back on the
yeah,
green.
And then it
and
rolls.
And then to try and hold it is ridiculous.
And yeah. I hate that dumbest hole because it is so dramatically downhill. But the way they've tilted the green, it creates this optical illusion. So it looks like the green is tilted towards you, but it isn't. The green is dead flat. It's just dead flat relative to an extreme downslope. And so when you're playing and you shoot it and it's 120 yards out.
I got a backstop up there. I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. It's fine. I'm going to hit my 120 shot. You hit a 120 shot on that, you're dead. You have to hit literally a 90-yard shot from 120 out or it's going to roll off. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Okay, I got another one. This is probably my loftiest goal of the season. I want to have one round where everything just kind of comes together and I get a sub-85 score.
Oh,
don't we all?
I'm going to set a goal. Like all of my goals I think are relatively achievable. I think that's possible, if not probable.
Yeah.
And so I want one on there.
That's your I would love to do this if all the stars align.
Yep.
Yeah, and again for our less golfy listeners, when we talk about everything aligning, you basically break the golf game into long game, short game, putting. So you basically have your three elements of the golf game, and you'll always have one, and you're having a good day if you have two, but getting all three on the same day is the unicorn.
Yeah.
That's...
Did you just say you have one of the three? Like, I get the yips all the time, man. There's days that I got nothing.
Oh, you always got one thing working.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think putting works for everybody when the other two melt. Because you got to have something.
All right. You ready for my last one?
Yeah, let's hear it.
My last one is to beat both of you in one round.
Like no strokes given, straight up.
Straight up
oh,
beat you.
Oh, man, coming out it.
I think it's possible, and we'll talk about this later when we're setting it up. I think you have a decent shot at beating us in a Stableford with no strokes given.
I'm talking about stroke for stroke.
Like Stableford or just like strokes?
No, stroke for stroke.
Stroke score.
Oh,
like
man.
Straight, wow. Okay,
I'm coming after happen. You.
I like it. I like it. I love a good competition.
I think you've got it in you, not only because of your skill, but you're also playing with two people that have the potential to completely melt on any given day.
I think my biggest handicap, and we'll get into this later, is something in my bag that I don't know if I'll do it this year, but I'll get you guys eventually.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I think it's a good telescope.
Okay, what about you, John Paul? Do you have any more?
Yes, and mine is along the same veins as you, and again, it is super lofty. For all of the struggles that I've had with swing speed, for all of the struggles that I have, my short game at the end of last year really clicked. I have a putter in the bag, and I finally got a good feel for that putter. I've always been good with the wedges. If I can get the driver in there, I have a lifetime goal, and it's only going to get less probable the older I get. I desperately want to break 80 once.
Whoa.
Before I die, I can break 80. Now, to put that into context, I have done a 9-hole round that would have broken 80 if I could have repeated it.
I was there.
You were there. That's the greatest round of my life.
And then you blew up on the last nine.
I was 2 over on the front nine. Yeah. It's the greatest front nine I've ever golfed in my whole life. I was 2 over par on the front nine, and I was 15 over par on the back nine.
Oh, wow.
It was a train wreck. And I was so excited. I got to the 10th hole. I was like, oh, yeah, baby, and immediately duck hooked one into the water.
It was the hot dog you had at the turn. That was the problem.
Yeah, it was
having a hot dog at the turn. That's a problem.
Well, I have two more goals. I'll share. They're related. Last goals of the season.
Quick fire. Okay.
And so last season – number of fairways hit, I averaged 31%.
Oh.
And greens in reg, 20%. That's horrible. So goal this year, I want 50% fairways hit off my drive.
Look at you being all nerdy.
40% greens in reg. Obviously, I want more than that. I think those are realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The GIN app just tells you all of that. You can get your averages for all your scores and everything. So broke that down.
It does.
I got to tell you, though, I think it would be fun right now. Do you guys have any goals for me? Do you have anything that you guys think that I will need to do accomplish my goals?
I have one just off the cuff for you.
Go for it.
Leave your grumpy pants in the car. When you start a round grumpy, your entire round melts down. And I'm saying this from a place of love. If you are grumpy before you even get there, your round is, even if you're shooting well, you're not realizing it because you're in that mindset. So as you get to the course, you need to do
some breathing techniques.
Well, Mike and Eli, it's Mike and Eli, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that whole flame mental game for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
You need to do...
Staring at the candle.
Aww. Something. Get into your zen zone, and that will vastly increase your golf game.
You just need to go to your happy place.
I accept that in the spirit that was given, and I could not agree more. In fact, we all have a particular way of marking our golf ball. Mine has always been just a big, gaudy, smiley face on it. And it's because years ago I used to golf with somebody that you guys have both met. I golfed with Rand, and he is a good golfer. Like, he had a good natural swing back in the day. He's much more athletically talented than I am. However, he suffered from what you see in me, but times 20. And he would have a bad hole, and he would be the most unpleasant human being to be around. And his golf game suffered from it because he could not focus on the next shot.
And I'm not saying it isn't warranted with you. Oh, yeah, you've got a stressful job and everything, but I'm just saying, when you watch Rick Shields, when he melts down, You're nowhere near that bad.
Another bogey.
I got a practical idea. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure, because, I put my tee on the ball for the first hole every time. I got the smiley face on the ball. If I turn the smiley face to face me on the first hole, it's a visual reminder to be happy.
So let's put this into practice. We are on the third hole, and we are waiting to tee off, and the group in front of us is taking 20 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
Man. Yeah, I don't know if there's any helping that.
Do you know what's worse than that, though?
Or, hold on.
And they're blasting
We're on the
music.
Fifth hole, and we're getting ready to hit our second shot on the green. And somebody the ball rolls up right next to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always the fifth freaking hole, and it's always a single in a cart. You're a single in a cart. Of course you're going to golf faster than three dudes walking.
I can already see your blood pressure rising just from laying the scenarios down. These are the moments where you need that zen.
Yeah. I know it. It's well received. All right. I've got one for Cody. You ready, Cody?
Sure. Hit me.
Okay, here's the deal. Your driver is a weapon. You love hitting it. You love hitting it more than any other club in your bag. And,
it's true.
And we've talked about this before. When I imagine playing golf, it's my pitching wedge or my 45 degree. That's what I'm imagining in my hand when I think, ooh, I get to go golfing today. That's the club that I imagine in my hand.
How boring is that?
You.
He imagines he's an a old pitching man. Club.
He's an old man. What do you expect?
You're too kind. You imagine driver. And so I think there are holes where you hit driver where you shouldn't. Your 3-wood and 5-wood get you plenty of distance to put you in position most of the time. And even if you love hitting driver, you just need to develop a fairway finder.
Yeah,
you need a 75% driver that always finds the fairway, because you're one of your biggest obstacles. You love hitting that long ball, but when that long ball starts losing it right, your day's over.
Well, and you overcompensate by hitting harder. Because we've been on the range before, and you're like, sometimes for me, it's just hitting out of my shoes that solves it for me. And so that's what you're trying to achieve. And I think, you just need to get a fairway finder.
That's totally fair. And I have tried that a little bit, and not to great success, but it's definitely something. Like, as we get more into the range, it's definitely something that I need to develop more.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the strategy on – I don't always need to hit driver or the longest or go for it in two. I think that is well-received advice. I agree with that 100%.
All right. Do we have anything for Eric? I've got one for Eric. Are you ready, Eric?
Yeah.
This is what you got to do. You're really good. I've got two for you. Do you?
I've only been going for a few years.
Do you want them in
there's
order?
A lot that could be fixed.
Yeah. No. You're good, and you're a very fast learner and a very good sport. Number one. You have got to do something about your irons. And we have talked about this, but
yeah,
you have a really nice golf swing, and it works really well on your driver most of the time. And actually with your wedges from a decent distance out, it looks really, really pretty. But with your driver, with your irons, you have the hardest time finding the bottom of your swing. And I don't think it's totally a technique thing. I think that those irons, they're good irons, but they're really heavy.
So to give some people some background, my irons, I was fortunate. There's a guy on Reddit that if you reach out to, he works at Callaway pre-owned, and he'll get you a great deal. I just kind of reached out to him and was like, hey, I'm looking for irons. And he's like, how about these? And I was like, great, I don't know. I don't even know what – will they be good for me? And he was like, yeah, sure. He was great. And I'm thankful for the discount and everything. But I regret not going and swinging those beforehand, because they are heavy. And so getting a consistent swing, I often will hit right into the ground, or I will top the ball, because it's hard to get that consistent swing with that weight at the bottom. And with the different lengths, it makes it – it's just –
yeah,
it's difficult.
The best golf gift I bought myself was getting fit for my irons.
I don't know if I need to get fit. I feel like I'm pretty, I'm like John Paul, where I'm like, I can get stock and it, like, if I went and got fitted, I feel like I would come out with stock.
But the thing is, you need to know, because there's still a couple of different options. And
okay,
I don't know.
But even if you don't get fit for them, the shafts in those clubs are made of myrrh or coal. I don't know what they're made of. The heart of a dark star. They're incredibly stiff. They're incredibly
they're very
heavy.
Stiff. And it hurts when you make contact with the ground. Like, it's not a pleasant experience.
I think that's a good goal to upgrade.
And I think
spending money. I love it.
I think surely very it's not easy. My swing. Surely there's some equipment that can solve this problem for me. But legitimately, one of the things that I notice, and the reason why I say this is that you and I both have, I won't call them delicate hands, but maybe a kinder word would be bony. We have bony hands.
I would say they're delicate. Yours I do development.
Yours
I
are don't. Fleshier than mine, but when you catch it, when you catch it thin, you're in pain.
Yeah.
And when you catch it fat, you're in pain.
Well, and especially here in Utah, where it's like you're hitting concrete every time you hit it. If you hit the ground, it's just painful. Like you can't. There's no. When you watch the pros and they're just like, yeah, right through the ground, you're like, oh, that looks nice.
You could not take out a divot here on our fairways. Oh, you no. just could not do it.
Yeah.
It hurt so bad.
I watch those guys on YouTube that take those beautiful bacon divots, and I'm like, yeah, you come out to my home course, you try and take a divot like that, you're leaving with half of the clubs in your bag.
Well, I mean, you even try to get a tee in the ground, and you need Thor's hammer to nail it in. It is the worst.
Do you remember that time when last year they moved the tee box off because they were doing maintenance on the tee box, and they just put us on the fairway next to the tee box?
Yes.
And literally we felt like we needed a hammer. Like
yeah,
literally, we were using a 7-iron to hammer a tee into the ground.
And that's on a nice course, too. That's not even a cheap course.
I think there was like an underground bunker we were trying to drill into or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. The second thing that I have for you is something I'm going to reflect also back on me because I need it. But it is often said in the annals of golf that you can work on your driver and you can learn driver, you can learn irons pretty quickly. The one thing that you don't get cheap is short game because it's feel, and that comes with reps.
Yep.
And we
that's one of my goals.
We love golfing so much that whenever we have a chance, like when we get free time, we want to golf. Right.
Well,
we want to go out. We want to play 9 holes or 18 holes or something of that nature.
Yeah.
If we could find even 2 or 3 times in the season, maybe it's too late to get on the thing and there's not enough daylight to finish a round, or maybe the course, maybe if the greens have been punched and conditions are not good, let's just hit the short game area and play up and down and play closest to the pin and spend some time together just honing the short game. Because I think for you more than either of us, that would pay humongous dividends.
Yeah, yeah. And
so are we trying to help him with his goal of beating us? Is that what we're doing here?
I mean, that's,
yes, we are friends. Collaborative. We are friends.
Golf is the weirdest game that way, where you cheer for everybody equally. It's like, I don't want anybody to lose. I want everyone to do well.
Those jokers. I guess if they want to help me beat them, I'm happy to let them do so. But let's move on. Let's instead switch over to
Gear Up. This is a segment called Gear Up, where we know that a golfer is only as good as his equipment, because whenever a golfer fails on the golf course, it is definitely not their golfing ability. It is the amount of money they have spent on all of their golf items.
Now, I think that this is a really great idea, because every true golf nerd loves talking about equipment and gear, but I think just spitballing this out there, I think that we do a cost-benefit analysis, but the cost-benefit analysis needs to be completely irrational and based on perceived strokes. And this comes from, I'm a car guy, and you know this, and I hate it when people modify their cars. It drives me absolutely crazy. Like you, some dude who doesn't know how to wear pants, no more than the giant building full of engineers at Honda who optimize, you know, I'm going to cut out all their hard work and put some crap I found in Pep Boys on it instead, and it's going to be better. I hate that. But in our case, the cost-benefit analysis is, how many strokes is this going to take off my game?
I love it. I love it. So, and just for the record, we're not – this isn't a what's in the bag. That'll be coming. We're going to do a what's in the bag for each of us, where we talk specifically about our clubs. This is a segment where we get to talk about gear. Bags, umbrellas, or the next gadgety thing we found at the PGA Superstore or Golf Galaxy or whatever that is going to shave those strokes off of our golf game.
Yes.
And Eric, why don't you tell us what we got today?
Some Zippo hand warmers from Costco.
Okay, no, this is no fair because I was going to unbox it with you and now you have a head start.
Well, while John
Paul's... I didn't want to be, you know, sitting here having the listeners listen to somebody.
No, I think that our listeners could live vicariously through this. We spent good money for this. How much was this gear?
$10.
These are normally $39.99, but they were closed out at Costco for $10 each.
Wow. Nice. That is an investment.
And so just to be clear on what these are, they aren't just a hand warmer. They are a hand warmer plus portable battery pack for charging a phone and or tablet.
I'm telling you right now that the packaging is robust. I am struggling.
Yeah, it took a while. So what's the power button? It says to push the power button.
Right there where your thumb, after like you're holding the handle, and then...
So this thing?
Yep, all right. And click and hold that.
So for those who really would like the lowdown on this, this is Zippo brand. It is the Zippo Rechargeable Hand Warmer and Power Bank. It says that it has up to 9 hours of heat and 5,200 mAh, which is milliamp hours, power bank. And it claims to save money, less waste versus disposables. Disposable hand warmers?
Have you ever bought a disposable battery charger for your phone or hand warmer? I have not.
I have done both.
The little packets that you...
I don't need them.
I have done... Well, of course you don't.
You've never gone like skiing or snowboarding and had them shoved up your gloves?
Yeah, I have pockets.
Cody doesn't know how to be cold.
You have pockets. When you're snowboarding, your hands are...
Do you remember...
The gloves are so big, you can't fit them in your pockets.
Well, yeah, but you still have gloves.
Do you remember...
I get so cold, I need them.
Well, that's why I saw that, and I was like, this is Eric. He needs this in his life.
It's fast. Okay.
Do you remember the time, though, when we got stuck in the rain during a golfing round, and we got soaked through the bone, and then the sun went down, and it got wicked cold, and you looked at Cody, or you looked at Eric and I, Cody, and you said... This is what you guys must feel like. You experienced cold for the first time in your life.
This is cold? This is what cold feels
like?
First impressions, Eric.
It heats up quick. Once you push that button and hold it, it heats up really quick. It's nice. I'm waiting for it to see like how warm it gets.
Do you know
what? Is there a level?
Yeah, so if you tap the power button, so it starts on high, and then that's medium. One more is going to be low. And then, if you tap it again,
it doesn't start at low and go to high.
I'm pretty sure it goes high and goes low. Okay. So hit that power button for me two more times, Eric. So to go green.
Yeah, it's green.
So that's single side heat. So you can choose to have it heat on both sides or just on one side of the power pack.
Which side?
I don't know. Wait for it and see which one stays warm.
They're both pretty warm.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Just for those who have no idea what we're talking about here. If I had to describe this thing, it's about 3 inches long, and it looks like a piece of punctuation that I'm unfamiliar with.
I think a pistol grip is probably a decent description.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a pistol grip. That's a good way to put it.
It's definitely made to form fit around your hand.
Oh, that's toasty.
It comes with a USB-A type cord so that you can plug in a phone.
I lost that in my... In my robust packaging, I must catch it.
So yeah, why I figured this would be considered golf equipment or golf accessory, in terms of taking strokes off of our game.
Okay, it is opposite of what you said. Low is one light, two lights is medium, three is high.
Okay, is it getting pretty hot?
Well, I just read the instructions, so that makes more sense. Okay. Oh yeah, it does get pretty hot. Whoa, that gets hot fast. I like it.
So yeah, so you can charge your phone with it. So when you're on the course and neglecting your husbandly duties, you could make sure that your phone is charged. Or really the use case I thought for this was Eric on the course always complaining about how cold it is. Like it'll be...
Yeah, I'll put this in my bag.
We'll be out there on the round and you'll wear like your warm rain/winter golf gloves instead of just like the singular glove. And I was like, Eric needs something like this.
Yeah, this would be good. Especially like when we're walking around, I'm fine. But when we're in a golf cart and we're riding around and there's that cold wind and you're driving and then you get out and you have to hit and you skull it, it hurts so bad.
I'll tell you where this is money. This is where this is coming in, okay? I want you to visualize this scenario. We are at our golf course. It is either mildly raining or it's just very cold. And you are the person who has to drive the cart. So this is the play. Left hand on steering wheel, right hand on heat pack. 1 minute, switch.
Yep.
1 minute, switch. And that way, you'll still have one cold hand, but it's never going to reach like that frostbitey threshold that makes it impossible to grip a club, which, again, Cody would never understand.
Well, truth be told, I've been trying out some new medication with my doctor, and my feet and hands have been freezing. My body has been just as warm as ever, but my hands and feet are always cold. And I asked him about it, and he's just like, "Yeah, just wear gloves." And I was like, "Thanks, doc."
Yeah, the diabetic guy knows nothing about that. For those people who'd like the background knowledge about why I'm gonna give this on a cold day, I'm gonna say 3 strokes.
Sure, I will say I would never pay $40 for that.
No.
Yeah, especially since it has micro USB and not USB-C. That's a big fail.
That's just to charge it back up. That's not for charging up. I don't care.
But for $10.
$10 all day.
Yeah, yeah, all day long.
I just feel like at this point in time, USB-C is like, why do anything else?
So 3 strokes saved is your John Paul's rating. I agree. It's somewhere around there. Eric, how many strokes is this going to save you on the course? Cold day, rainy, you're feeling your body seize up. You grab your Zippo handheld warmer.
I know
and
what
it brings soul back into your life so you know, can finish up the round.
I really think this is great value. But in all honesty, maybe 2 strokes for me. Because, I mean, just my skill level is not there.
So in a couple weeks when they've opened the golf courses, but it's still not quite warm enough for us to have an enjoyable round.
I was thinking today. I was outside. I was like, oh, I am ready.
Say that again. Say that again. A couple of weeks. Say the words a couple of weeks again.
In a couple of weeks.
Say it again.
So where we live, courses are starting to get ready for the golf season, but they are not quite there yet. And I just imagine we're going to have a couple of early rounds where it could be rainy and wet. Let's see if that helps you at all. I'm curious if it does.
I love spring golf so much, and I'm excited to take this out on the course and try it out. But mostly I'm just excited for spring golf.
Enough of that. It's time for Talk Nerdy to Me. All right, so Talk Nerdy to Me is going to be a segment where we ask a nerdy question, and each time one of us will come up with a nerdy question that we feel would be fun for the group to discuss.
Is it only considered a success if we end up fighting and shouting at each other by the time we're done?
If a golf club isn't thrown at somebody, then it's a fail. And if you have opinions, listeners, feel free to weigh in on our social media. We're on Blue Sky and Instagram. All right, so this week's question, this is one that has been going around a lot on social media, and my wife asked me even about it. If you had to be stuck on a ride in Disneyland for 24 hours straight, you could get off, but you have to get right back into the line and get back on. You can have bathroom breaks. You have to eat in the line or on the ride, and you're doing this for 24 hours straight.
And you're allowed to eat on the ride. We're assuming that.
Yeah, like Disney, in this imaginary world, Disney has given the okay for you to eat.
So the crux of the thing is, what ride could you ride continuously for 24 hours, including the line without?
Well, you need to be able to get out to use the restroom or to get food. Yeah. Mike, I have a couple of questions just to make sure I understand.
Okay, go for it.
What about situations, like, are we talking where the lines are always at their peak? Or the lines ebb and flow?
No. We're talking like, okay, average wait time.
No, hold it, Cody. Now, we've all been to Disneyland many times. Have you ever seen a line that was not at its peak? Ever? No. Our luck dictates that it's always going to be the longest possible line.
So let me tell you where I'm coming from. I'm trying to figure out, are we talking 230-minute radiator racers? Or are we talking we line drop, we're there first thing in the morning, and we're walking on?
There is
no average wait time. Like, if you check it at 11 o'clock on a weekday.
You can tell this is a nerdy discussion because we're way over analyzing it.
Yeah.
I don't think your amygdala could take radiator springs over and over and
over. No, it was just an example because it's always like, has a long
3 hours of intense boredom.
That would be the worst one because it's the shortest one and the wait time is the
20
longest.
20 seconds of the most amazing thing in the world followed by 3 hours of intense boredom.
I don't know why it's so popular. Like, it's a fun ride. I don't know why you would wait 3 hours.
Today on Unpopular Opinions by Eric.
I like the ride. I wouldn't wait 3 hours for it. It's just not, and especially like when it's the heat of summer, it's miserable.
Okay, before we get into which one you would, let's talk about ones you definitely would not.
Incredicoaster, there's no way.
You would just die. You couldn't do it.
Do you think you could run around?
No,
in
not a chance.
There's no chance. No.
I have a small list. I'll go through them real quick. The Autotopia, because the smell on that would kill you. Drink just all those fumes.
Could you imagine trying to eat a churro? Bonk! Oh,
yeah. Space Mountain, I love that one, but all those tight turns over and over again, you'd get pretty sick pretty quick. Astro Orbiters.
I can't ride that once.
Yeah.
That one's... Every time I've ridden that, I've broken.
Well, and imagine if you're riding this over and over again. Okay, here's a clarifying question. Are you in the ride by yourself? Or like on a seat, or are you having to share it? Because if you have to share it,
that's
like,
a good question.
That Astro Orbiters would be the most awkward thing.
Oh, I have seen the most awkward thing on Astro Orbiters because I love John Paul and I love his wife. Those two, as adults, do not fit in an Astro Orbiters rocket.
Did you hear about our story?
And the cast members made them ride it together.
Did you hear about the time that we went? So we went in, and the guy was like, "We're like, can you do three people?" And the guy's like, "Sure." And then, so we got in.
When you say three people, you and your wife and your kid.
Yeah. Shoving me in the bottom of that. My legs were splayed out so bad. And I got sick from going around and around. I couldn't walk. Like, I was walking bow-legged. You know when Shanghai Noon, when he slides off the horse and has to... Yeah, I was like that for a good long while.
You know,
it broke my knees. My knees were bent in funny angles. It was terrible.
You know how, like, at amusement parks, they've got that thing that says you have to be this tall to ride?
Yeah.
That ride needs the opposite. There needs to be a thing that says if you are this height, don't do this. It will hurt.
Another one that would be painful would be Indiana Jones. I love that ride as well, but it's so loud and it's so jerky. It would give you, your neck would be pretty.
You guys are thinking about this in a very different way than I was, because I was thinking about, like, I like Small World once. I think after about the third loop on that becomes hell.
You could tune it out. I've put on some headphones or,
I've done that one a lot with my youngest, and I tell you what, it is, you get used to it. It's not that bad.
At some point, I would start grabbing the dolls and drowning them.
It's quiet enough and cool enough, you can like fall asleep. So that one's fine. I think Peter Pan, that one's dark. It's quiet. It's not that bad. That's what
I have.
I have two.
Isn't this supposed to be one? You got to narrow it down.
Well,
one.
I have two because one is almost like a cheater.
You're A-lister. Your cheater better not be my one, because I already know what my one is.
I'm pretty sure I know what it is, because it's your favorite ride.
It is my favorite ride, so leave it and do the other one.
Give this
to me.
The thing is, I don't know if that one counts.
It counts. It totally counts.
Okay.
There's a line for it. It counts.
I was going to say Small World as well, but in a pinch, I think Pirates would also work.
I would do Pirates. I think also...
Pirates is a strong choice.
The only problem is that if you're trying to get any rest, you know, obviously they're not really big drops, but there are a couple drops. But you could, you know, close your eyes and get a little 15-minute snoozer on that and be fine. All right, John Paul, give us your number one, because we all know what it is.
Oh, it's the train.
Yep.
It's the train. And you could say it doesn't count. It totally counts. I'm going to give you two reasons why it counts, and then I'll tell you why I picked it. It counts, A, because there's a line at it. And so it's a ride. You get on it.
Yeah, when would you... Okay, but how would you get on and off?
And number two,
anytime.
I can argue...
Would you have to get off every time and get back on?
No, you can stay on that.
No. I'm saying for this rule. Like, because part of it is you have to get off and get back in the line.
But technically, the ride ends when you want it to.
You know what? I'm going to get off it every time I need a new churro. And that will be relatively frequent.
What's the most number of times you've ridden the train around in a loop continuously?
Grand Circle Tour, I did three in a row.
Okay.
Grand Circle. And that's not including Tinder rides, because I've done it longer on a Tinder. Okay. I will tell you why I love the train, because I always have loved trains. I love trains. Trains are one of my favorite things in the world. The fact that those are real trains, people don't know that about them, but they predate the park. They're restored 3/8s that came off sugarcane plantations. They're beautiful. They're maintained, and you guys know this about me. When we talk about being nerdy, I love engineering. Like, I love well-built things. And there's so many things in Disneyland that are well-built, but there's just something about the old-timey craft of that and the condition that they keep them in. It makes me so happy. The smell, the sound, I could live on it. I could just sit and go around it all day.
And I think that the train is the clear winner in terms of getting on, going around as long as you want. You could put on your headphones. You could pull out your laptop. Literally, no one would care.
All right, folks, it's time for our weekly Birdie Bear. We're sitting here together, and we're quite thirsty. This week's offering is Mug Zero Sugar Root Beer, which is commonly available, although not quite as common as the A&W that we tried last week.
I did not think it was commonly available. I saw that, and I was like, I don't know if I've seen that before.
Oh, my. I've accidentally run into it. I have a soda machine
at work.
That
bodes well.
No, I have a soda machine at work that I'm in charge of refilling, and I picked up I just thought they changed their logo because they do so very frequently, and I picked up accidentally a zero sugar
one. Oh, so all your students had zero sugar?
No, it's the teachers. It's in the faculty lounge, okay. And they were all like, what the? And I realized as I was loading them, I was like, oh, they're not going to drink this. So I took it home. Yeah, we're going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay.
Give it a
now
smell.
We make the chink.
Smells good. I like it more than the A&W. A&W for years has been like kind of the... Yeah, A&W, they make the best root beer, but I don't know.
This one has like the aftertaste is not good.
No.
It's
neither
got like,
was the A&W's, though.
Well, this one's more chemically. Like, this one, when it hits the back of your throat, it's just not as pleasant.
Yeah, I'm getting that now. It goes down. It's got more punch than the A&W. It's more flavorful, like overall.
I would give this one maybe a 6. Because I like the initial, but that aftertaste is not pleasant.
You're going 6 on it? Cody's going in for another sip.
I need another a test of this to see if I feel the same way. You know what? It reminds me of a good root beer float root beer.
Mm.
Mug would be a good root beer float root beer.
It's definitely got a sharpness that the A&W doesn't have.
I'm gonna keep it at a 7.
You like it as a 7? I'm gonna go 6.
Yeah,
it's close to the A&W.
It's close, but that aftertaste.
But I think the A&W is better.
Yeah, awesome.
What should our next one be?
Oh,
are there others out there?
I've got two more in my garage. And
is there a Shasta?
No, this is news. This is news because I told one of my friends at work. I said, "Hey, we're doing this," and she was just asking, "Oh, what kind of segments and things are you doing?" And I mentioned this, and she said, "Do you know that on State Street there is a store that sells
the
nothing
root beer
but root
store.
Beer. It's called the Root Beer Store." So we
does
on
it,
our
does
on
it look
our,
like a big barrel?
I don't know, but on our upcoming on our upcoming guy day, we definitely need to do a pilgrimage to the Root Beer Store.
Oh yeah, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
As a reminder to our listeners, if you know of any good diet root beers, and sadly, it has to be diet because of dear John Paul.
Chime in. I think I could survive a shot glass full of real root beer.
Are we
going to
open this up to just root beers?
Oh, no. It's got to be a root beer.
I said root beer, just not diet.
No, I think we could do non-diet root beers. From
oh,
diet.
That opens
we
up.
Just can't do this segment that's going to kill you, man.
I know that, but as long as I limit. So
I think I already
on a
know
diet,
what my favorite
I'll,
is.
On a diet, I'll go nuts, but on a non-diet one, I will take, three quarters of a shot.
Okay. Well, if you know of, I still would like to know a good diet root beer. If you know, great. If diet soda is not your thing, but you know of a good regular root beer, send it our way, please. We would love to know.
And it's got to be good.
It's got to be good.
If I'm going to lose a foot over it, it needs to be delicious.
Yeah.
And I would figure that three quarters of this shot glass probably equates to about 4 holes worth of stale Coke bottles. So I it's not going to kill me.
Okay. Join us next time where we talk about how we plan to accomplish these magnificent goals, as well as our first scramble of the season. This has been For the Record.